I don't understand why you would cut this valuable piece of audio.
Me yelling at Jean-Luc to turn his gain down.
It would have been better if we had gotten on the recording you yelling at Scully. Or not Scully. I keep doing
Ripley.
That. Yeah, I have a friend that has a cat named Scully, and I keep mixing up Scully and Ripley. I called my friend's cat Ripley just like 2 days ago. I don't know why. I guess it's just because I'm a misogynist and all women are the same.
that is a classic Emily trait. It's first thing.
The new Emily is a misogynist.
Wow. Here for it. Yay.
Anyways.
It has taken us forever to start this episode.
You are in control, John.
This is your
shtick.
No, I was going to start, and then I had to look up the episode number, and Chad told me to do something about my audio. But I'm going to start now. That was bad. Hello, and welcome to episode the 260th. That's a nice round number for you. Of the internet's one and only podcast about comic books. You are listening to the Comics Podcast. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, joined for the second time by Emily 2.0. New Emily, how's it going?
Hello.
Chad's here.
I have to edit this tomorrow and already hate myself.
And Alex is here.
Hey, future Chad.
How's it going? Hi, future Chad.
Past Alex.
Also, hey, regular Chad, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, any Chad listening to this? Hello. How you doing?
Any Chad is a friend of mine.
Aw.
I don't know how to process any of this. So I'm just not gonna.
Well, nice.
That's my strategy.
Just move fucking right nailed along.
It. Yay.
How's everybody doing? How have people's weeks been since last we recorded an episode of the show?
Oof. I've been good.
Yay.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Anything interesting to report from the front?
I'm almost done with those Necrons that Joe got me for Christmas. I've been painting them some more.
Nice.
I think another 2 to 3 hours, maybe, depending on how crazy I want to get with the detailing. But I'm pretty happy with them so far. And then I've been mixing some music, getting all that squared away. And that's been difficult because it always is. I ended up re-recording one of the songs, or not like the whole thing, but a decent chunk of it yesterday. It's like, I got home, warmed up, and I was like, I wonder if I do this way, will it sound right? I'll just, well, you know how it goes, right? I didn't want, good to be the enemy of perfection, but then when it came time to edit, I was like, yeah, but this isn't good. So we need to at least get to good before we can start talking about perfect and wanking on about that kind of philosophical shit. So
yeah,
I like the new recordings better. I'm a little more intelligible, which is either good or bad, depending on what you think of my lyrics. So that was fun. Trying to get myself to sound like Phil Bozeman and processing has been really difficult. No one probably knows who that is.
This is not the first time that you've mentioned that name. And
who's Mr. Bozeman?
Who is that?
He's the front man to Whitechapel.
I've heard. I feel that like band.
Harold and Kumar went there.
Yeah, his tone is achievable. Like, he's got a very low, crispy. I don't know. Like, I can find the placement he does. He's definitely better at it because he's been doing it for much longer. But as far as like things I can do and people to aspire to be, he's the easiest one to hit, I think.
Nice.
While still being, obviously he's got a really iconic voice. He's just a freaking powerhouse in the genre. So, not saying he's, what he's doing is easy, but just as a first rung, it's attainable, whereas someone like Alex Terrible is never gonna happen, because he's built like a brick shithouse, and I am not.
What a lovely describing of brick shithouse.
Have you never heard that phrase before, Alex?
No, this is the first time I've ever heard a person's voice described as a brick shithouse and it being like a compliment. Like, man, I wish. Huh.
Yeah, metal vocals are fun. That's one of those, that's the grossest thing I've ever heard. Good job.
I mean, it's good to have, things to reach for, or like goals to do, and I think it's good to have this Whitechapel boy you can try to get to.
Yeah, I'll send you one of the songs when the show's over.
Cool.
Or I could do it now if we actually want to talk about this. It's one of those things. I recorded myself doing an 8-second guttural the other day, and I was like, I've never done it like this consistently, this good for this long. So I posted it on my Facebook, and it's funny how like the people in my life mostly don't care or know, but they're encouraging, right? Like my mom liked it or whatever, and you're just like, yay, that's cool. And it's like, I know you.
Aww.
You wish I was literally doing anything else in a way, you know, like I'm gonna take singing lessons. Oh, that's great. And it's like for this, and it's like, oh.
And it's like, ah!
I've talked to over the 4th of July weekend, I was hanging out with some friends, and that kind of got brought up with this, you know, people in their 50s and whatnot. And they're interested and it's cool, but they're, once again, it's like, what if you could sing like a normal person though? And it's like, well, I can't. I'm not taking lessons for that. I fucking suck at that. But like, I sent her Kardashev, which is my vocal coach's band, and yeah. She's like, oh, these guys are actually kind of cool. They got a lot of different stuff going on. And it's like, this is how I get people into the screamy stuff. It's like you introduce them with some mixed things with lots of fun song structures, and it's like, once you learn to like it here, you can learn to like it elsewhere.
Heck yeah. There's a snake lady in this Whitechapel music video, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool music video. I've been practicing a lot to this song.
Yeah.
Which is Elitist Ones for the listeners.
Well, that's cool, Chad. So I'm proud of you.
So, this is a band that you were into before, and then you're like, oh, I can, like, kind of hit what they're doing? Or were you like, this is what I can do, and you, like, found a band that was, like, similar kind of thing? Or how does that?
So, I found this band before I started taking lessons with Mark. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where this genre of music, I just assumed that they were doing completely different techniques than what I was doing, instead of the fact that I was just doing those techniques really wrong, which is what happened. And so when I found out that like this guy is doing it supposedly the same way I was doing it, I'm like, oh, we sound nothing alike. That's a problem. I like this band. I like their newest album a lot because it's kind of got some melodic elements to it that are really cool. And so when I started taking lessons and practicing, like, I wasn't aiming for this at all. I was going for like, okay, can I sound like the guy from Amon Amarth, who's got a really like nice, rounded, uncompressed, just false chord low. Like he's got a great voice, but he's not doing a whole lot of crazy stuff with it because he doesn't need to. He's not writing the music for that. And so got better at that. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, I want to take this to the next level. And you start looking at bands that I listen to and I'm like, oh, well, these guys are doing some neat stuff. How are they doing it? And then just kind of setting like new levels of progress and trying to reach them. Mm-hmm. And so I like this band a lot. I don't listen to a lot of deathcore, believe it or not. Like I have the handful I listen to and I just abuse them versus, you know, having like 10 or 12 different bands. So it really comes down to like the two or three I really like. And I feel like this guy's got, I don't know, he hits everything I want out of this kind of vocal. While also it feeling somewhat attainable. Cause like he's, like I said, he's not doing a lot of like really crazy acrobatic stuff. Just the things going on in his mouth and throat. Like, I know what he's doing. It's just a matter of, like, keeping it there, balanced and whatnot. I wish I had the proper... I'm really bad at talking today. I'm sorry I'm doing so much of it.
It's cool, because, like, I mean, like, to say I studied music isn't really... I mean, I went to high school for just vocal and everything. And just, like, hearing the little part of this Whitechapel song, I'm like, I have no idea how... He makes it sound. I have no idea how you make your sound, Chad. Like you've explained it a couple of times, but like, you know, I'm like sitting in my room and I'm like, nope, I don't know.
It starts from I started from a clearing your throat. So and that grit you feel at the end is your false chords coming together and flapping around.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you push on that, and then everything else is like directing the airflow and the directing the sound in your mouth and just like opening or closing specific muscles. And Alex, you probably actually know what some of those are because you do have a background in singing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how do you like sustain it? Because I feel like like I don't know if I could go more than like 3 seconds with it is the thing.
A lot of diaphragm, a lot of like proper breath support.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the lessons I've had with Mark are just like straight, here's 50 minutes, we are going to work on breath support exercises.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's not as fun to pay for, but it's super, super critical.
Right.
When you're doing it right, you actually don't use that much air. I use more than I should. And the volume actually isn't that loud. It's kind of around your speaking voice, a little above. And so when it sounds like, oh, he's going to doing all this work for this noise, it's really, he's not actually doing that much work for it. He's just working really efficiently and knows exactly like what he's supposed to do, you know, to very minute details.
That's interesting. Because, like, I mean, yeah, in high school, like, I learned how to, like, obviously, like sing for a long time while also you can kind of breathe a little bit while doing and trying to figure that stuff out. But
mm-hmm.
It seems like it's a whole different, like, thing to, like, in my brain to, like, unlock in order to potentially hit that. So that's
interesting. I mean, the first things we started to do in, like, the lessons was, like, okay, talk like Cookie Monster. Or we're going to bark like a, you know, like a big dog. Like, these just kind of stupid things that we got to find where the distortion is so you can feel it and know what good distortion feels like versus what bad distortion feels like. Because the bad stuff does not feel good because you're slamming everything around that's not supposed to be slammed around. So there's a lot of like somewhat painful trial and error. Like it's definitely a bumpy road to get there. I'm not going to like tell people it's not. But
yeah, I also think that like having a somewhat stranger like making Cookie Monster and barking sounds in front of them also helps to sort of cut down that that nervousness that a lot of people get when they sing to other people. Mm-hmm. That's this cool barrier breaking.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the first couple lessons I had with him were like really nerve wracking because I didn't know who he was, and I thought I was coming in with some level of foundation, and it turns out I wasn't. And so overcoming that and being knocked down a few pegs, but then it's like he's like, okay, today, Chad, we're gonna talk. We're gonna bark like a dog. Think of the biggest dog you can do. Go. and we would like we spent like 10 minutes just barking at each other over, you know, webcams, and it sounded awful and it was stupid as fuck. But when he's doing something stupid and he's like, I'm gonna show you how to do something really stupid, and then I want you to do it back to me just as stupid, and you're like, well, at least we're like on the same playing field here.
After all, why would all four of us get together to do this show if not to be stupid for an hour every week, right?
That's true.
Pretty much.
Yay!
Did anyone else get up to anything exciting this week? Aside from the, you know, usual excitement of reading comic books for babies.
I'm just clearing my throat. Go ahead, Emily.
Saved it. I watched something kind of cool earlier. Ooh. Instead of reading all the comic books that I should have, but I only missed a couple of them.
You didn't read Noctura?
No, definitely not.
Emily.
Well, it wasn't on the list for one, so
that's because Jean-Luc has good taste.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. But what I watched earlier, I am gonna take a guess and say that the word Takarazuka means nothing to the three of you.
Well, the word taco.
You're close, but no cigar. No, Takarazuka is, it's the Takarazuka Review is an all-female theater troupe in Takarazuka, Japan, and they do, like, sometimes they'll do, like, Japanese adaptations of, like, Western, like, Broadway plays, and then sometimes they'll do, like, stuff inspired by mythology. Sometimes they'll do, like, review shows, which is more, like, sort of, like, just skits and musical numbers that not necessarily, like, a full, like, show. And I watched one with a friend of mine earlier. It did not have subtitles, but my friend has been living in Japan for the past 10 years and speaks Japanese. So she was telling me what was supposed to be happening while things were happening on screen. And it was just really insanely good. Like all of like the music and like the costumes and there's a lot of like, since it's an all-female troupe, like you've got women and then you've got women playing men, and like everybody was just in the most fantastic suits and outfits, and I loved it. It was very good. I could barely tell you anything about what the plot was, but it didn't really matter. It was all about the spectacle. It was very fun.
Yay.
I feel like women pull off suits better than men pull off suits. I don't know if that's a controversial opinion.
I don't think it is here, anyway. I think we would all agree, probably. But what I want to know is what Jean-Luc thinks about Black Widow. I've been waiting on bated breath for the hot takes.
about Black Widow.
Yeah.
I mean, the hot take is that it's a Marvel movie. I don't even know if that's a hot take. I mean, I think the hot take is probably that I liked it more than I think just about everyone else that I usually... Yeah, like, people in my movie circles, like, seem to think it was some sort of, you know, worse than average MCU movie. I thought it
that
was...
That can't be true.
Are they all younger than you? Because you might be getting older, Jean-Luc.
No, they're all older. No, my... The people who are, like, in my, like, film friend group are all older than me. But
are they getting younger? No, never mind. Go ahead.
No. But there were parts of it that I genuinely enjoyed. I mean, a lot of it unfortunately devolves into typical Marvel movie nonsense with, you know, all the usual, like, really bad action scenes. But it's kind of salvaged by, well, a lot of it by David Harbour having a lot of charisma on screen. I'd say it's about 70% him playing a character who thinks he's the straight man and is like a total Chad, but is actually a complete loser and the butt of every joke in the movie. And he carries that role really, really well. And I would say that the rest of the percentage of me enjoying the movie is mostly that Florence Pugh is just stunningly attractive.
Is she worth seeing the movie alone? Like, it, would it be worth it just to see her?
Yeah, I mean, her performance is really good. I would say all of the main characters who are played by Scarlett Johansson, David Harbour, Florence Pugh, and Rachel Weisz, she is, like, the only one who maintains a good Russian accent throughout the entire movie, which the others do to varying degrees of success. I swear there are points in the movie where Rachel Weisz just said, fuck this nonsense, this is a fucking comic book movie, I'm not doing this, and gave up. But Florence Pugh maintains it the whole time like a fucking professional. And her performance is really good. Like, I don't want to undercut her performance. And there are some scenes in the movie that I genuinely liked. The conceit of it is basically that the characters that those four actors play were Russian spies who went undercover in Ohio and were like a family, even though none of them are actually related to one another. And then when the mission ends, Black Widow and her, like, foster sister get thrown into the Red Room program, and the parents go on and do their own thing. But there's a couple scenes in the movie where you genuinely get a sense of their familial relationships as they sort of, like, come together for the first time in 20 years. And that stuff, I think, is actually, like, fairly strong. It's not breaking any new ground or anything, but it's well written enough that it's actually compelling. But as with, you know, most Marvel, I think that most Marvel movies have, like, some kernel like that, that is, like, interesting and a good way to spend, like, 10 minutes of the movie. And then the movie just completely throws that stuff out the window, in favor of some others, in favor of, you know, typical Marvel movie fare. They have to blow up a big base. They have to fight a lot of guys. Although the people they fight are mostly girls in this movie, actually, it's not guys. My favorite part was when they played a haunting cover of Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit.
That's the one thing I keep hearing, I keep seeing people talk about online.
Yeah, so it's very funny. And the part of it that I found especially funny is that the part in the chorus where he says my libido is just mixed so low you can't even hear it. Like, the song doesn't cut out or anything. It plays, like, the whole song. But that one lyric is just mixed so low because I guess they don't want the 7-year-olds to hear my libido, which was just kind of funny to me. But yeah, it was okay. It wasn't like a trash fire. Florence Pugh can definitely do better, but, you know, sometimes you got to make dog shit movies to make good movies.
I mean, imagine the shmoney that she made.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I mean, I'm sure she'll be back in another MCU movie at some point. They kind of, like...
Isn't she the new Black Widow kind of thing?
Yeah, that's kind of how they set it up at the end. Is that, like, all of the characters could return, except for Black Widow herself, because she died.
She did.
She fucking died.
Spoilers, I guess. But it was okay. I don't want to, like, sing its praises too much, because, honestly, I saw it, I don't know, like 6 or 7 hours ago now, and the only parts of it I remember are the parts that I actually liked, which are about, like, 20 minutes, or the parts, like, the Smells Like Teen Spirit thing that I found funny, which is probably in total like 20 to 30 minutes of an almost 2 hour long movie. So it's kind of like I'm over 2 hours long. Jesus Christ. That movie does not, I just looked at the runtime. That movie, felt like it didn't end, but I thought that the runtime was not 134 minutes. That's insane.
Oof. Marvel needs to quit that shit. Like, of all the problems I have with their movies now, it's that they're so long.
They're so long.
I don't care that much.
And this movie has, like, two false endings also. Like,
nice.
Oh, I hate that. Only Speed Racer can do that. Even they kind of...
That Speed Racer
don't finish
is
that
too
sentence,
long.
Chad. Hey. Hey guys,
there's definitely a moment. There's definitely a moment where it feels like they're setting up the final confrontation, and it just like is like, okay, we actually need another one after this, and it goes on for another half an hour. But it's an okay movie. If you like Marvel movies, you'll probably like it. If you don't, you probably won't. If you like Florence Pugh or David Harbour or Rachel Weisz or any of the actors, you should probably see it. Although, especially if you like
Scarlett Johansson once in the movie's called
Black
Widow.
Because she's so
it's just very
fucking boring. Like, she's not an interesting actor. Like, she's been in good stuff and she's done good performances, but like, she doesn't really bring anything particularly interesting to the table. Like, we've seen her play Black Widow in 7 or 8 movies now. It's not like a particularly interesting performance. Like, the most emotion she's been getting is when she like gets upset about not being able to have kids with Bruce Banner in Age of Ultron, right? That's like the only time she's given any sort of emotional payoff or even an attempt at a character arc. And honestly, this movie is really not about her. It's about the supporting cast more than it is Black Widow herself. I mean, she's definitely a driving force in some of the plot, but the arcs that actually matter are the other three characters, and especially Florence Pugh's character and David Harbour's character, because Rachel Weisz is just not there for most of the movie. But even her, like, the things that she has to do in the last act of the movie feel more impactful than the things that Black Widow herself does. I lost track of what tense I was using in that sentence. But anyway.
Boo.
That's Black Widow.
How was the actual movie experience? Because I feel like that might have, you know, increased your enjoyment. Where you're like, hey, I haven't been to a movie in so long. And
well, I went to two movies last weekend, and I saw Furious 9 like 2 weeks ago. So this is the fourth movie I've seen in a theater since I've been vaccinated. Since theaters open, I should say. It would be much more if I'd been able to go as soon as I was vaccinated. But this was definitely the fullest theater. It was almost entirely full, and it had that sort of like low bustle of like bored kids and couples talking to each other and that kind of stuff, which I don't know. I kind of like that. I mean, people tried to clap at the end, which this is not a like.
I think like, they're just happy to be in the theater. I don't think it relates to the movie.
I mean, I get it. I got it for like Endgame, like, you know what, movie's dog shit. But if you want to clap, it's like the end of this thing that they've been setting up for 10 years of your life. But,
hey, speaking of clapping, we have to reclap.
But yeah, the theater experience was good. I mean, I like that sort of communal aspect of having other people in the theater while I'm seeing movies.
Were there a lot of people out?
It was a full theater, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is not, hasn't been the case. When I saw Zola and The Forever Purge last weekend.
Ooh, I want to know.
It was fine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff in there, but it just didn't have any, like, emotional impact on me, really.
Okay.
It was one of those movies where I left the theater and I was like, that was a really compelling movie. And there's sort of a lot to think about in terms of like the subject matter and the, you know, unreliable narrator, and especially knowing that it is adapted from a Twitter thread. So like there's some
interesting. Have you read the Twitter thread?
No, because I don't read 100+ tweet Twitter threads. I've said this before on Twitter.
Well, that's fair. I just was wondering if maybe you happened to read this one. Just
I mean,
because
I,
the movie was coming out.
Yeah, I've been aware of it, but I've never read it.
It's pretty good.
So I've heard, but I'm not gonna read.
Like, I read it. I read it not long after it happened, and then reread it recently to refresh my memory.
Yeah, that's fair. If I wanted to read 150 tweets, I'd just read a book.
I remember that Twitter thread.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
That one was fun. That was like one of the few like stories through Twitter that I feel like Twitter helped make work. Like if that were told as a blog or something, it would be way less worth reading. But because it was told in tweets and like had that the time skips between the parts and whatnot, it was actually it was a neat piece of art, I guess. Like I'm not saying it's you need to go read it, but I do remember that like somewhat fondly as a neat way to storytell through Twitter.
I'm kind of glad that people are not trying to do that as much anymore.
Also, yes.
Well, wasn't... But that was supposedly true, right?
Oh, like, yeah,
she
no,
claims
I just...
it's true. It's not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but it's still, like...
It's hard to call it... Well, I guess you can call it what you want, but I wouldn't consider that really to be art if you're just live-tweeting something.
Well, I mean...
I mean, if it's good.
I feel like there's... I feel like there was a... There was a way that the layout of everything was constructed. It wasn't necessarily a live tweet because it wasn't being tweeted while it happened. It was being told after the fact.
Yeah, it was in retrospect, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, even a true story can still be told in a, you know, story fashion. I mean, we have autobiographies.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call an autobiography art. But that's just me. Maybe I'm gatekeeping.
Yeah, John, stop gatekeeping.
If someone writes a great story and it's on Twitter, like it's just kind of a different form. I mean, I don't normally go to Twitter for like works of literature art, but like
you shouldn't.
But I mean, it's possible.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, the movie was fine. There are moments when it hits some like really high peaks in terms of tension. That I think if you sort of like, if you've read the Twitter thread, which like I said, I hadn't, might not be as engaging, but it was like, it's like really effective as like it's like a 3.5-star movie, which is what I gave it on Letterboxd. And it is like a really effective, like mid-range sort of thriller movie, which is, you know, it was entertaining and it was enjoyable for what it was. But it didn't it didn't land for me in the way that I had kind of hoped it would going in. I mean, I didn't see like a ton of buzz for it, but I'd seen the trailer and thought it looked cool. But
sure,
it was good.
Mm. I've been anticipating it anyway as like a previous enjoyer of the thread itself.
I mean, you should watch it. Like
I know.
I would definitely recommend it. I'd recommend The Forever Purge even more. That movie ruled.
Really know anything about The Forever Purge. TBH.
It's the fifth Purge movie.
I mean, yeah, but like...
What if the Purge didn't end when the Purge was supposed to end?
Right, so this time is like the inevitable thing of what if, you know, the Purge has like been an excuse for people to just like arm themselves and just, you know, do horrible things. What if they just decided that like... they could capitalize on the fact that law enforcement didn't do shit for an entire 24 hours and that 24 hours was spent causing chaos. What if they just decided to continue doing that and, you know, tried to take over the country and take over cities and people tried to take over cities. Hmm. And it's, I mean, the Purge has always been like, I've been beating this drum for like a year or two now. That I think The Purge has been like a really underappreciated horror franchise in terms of its prescience and like its ability to do effective political commentary. This movie, I mean, the conceit is basically that the people who are continuing The Purge after The Purge ends are a bunch of like right-wing white supremacist groups.
I mean, I kind of gathered that from just the basic premise.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah, I figured. But just in case people were missing that. That's the premise, and it's about a group of people that sort of like ends up together trying to make it out of the United States and away from the violence. And it's like I am honestly, every time I see these movies, I'm really impressed that like what they do with really low budgets, because there's a lot of really cool camera work and the effects are really fucking good, and it's they're just so good at building tension. And this one, I think like the political messages end up being a little bit mixed because it really can't decide how it should portray the government's response, because it's in the Purge universe, there has been, like, an extreme right, far-right government of the United States that put the Purge into place, and it can't decide if the government would just try to stop the people doing the Forever Purge or would try to help them. And so it ends up, like, the metaphors end up being a little mixed and less effective than I think in some of the previous movies, but it is, again, like, a really good thriller. There's a lot of, like, sick action scenes that evoke some of the, like, you know, really great action movies of the last 5 to 10 years. I liked it a lot. I had a good time. I highly recommend people check out the franchise. I think the second movie can be watched on its own and is genuinely, like, one of my favorite horror movies of last decade. I think that it's well worth your time. It's also, like, 80 minutes long or something. It's phenomenal.
Oh, wow. That's excellent. A seller. Oof,
we're at 35 minutes. Alex, is there anything you want to talk about real quick before we jump into comic books?
I also started painting miniatures again this week. Or I don't know if you started painting miniatures again this week, but I sure did.
Yay!
Yeah, work's been stressful, and I was like, hey, I like painting miniatures. Why haven't I been painting miniatures for the last 6 months? So, finishing off my Rebel Soldiers, and then I'm gonna start on the Imperial Troopers, which are a little harder, because my brother did them, and it ended up being very, like, the paint was a bit too... He used too much paint, and then, like, it wasn't smooth, and it looked really weird, so I'll see how I do on it. It's also been a while since I painted.
You can strip that if you need to, but you'll need, like, a bit of paint thinner.
Yeah. I remember he was just, like, he kept on, like, stripping it, and then, like, putting more on, and then stripping it and putting more on. It, like, never looked good, so we'll see, but...
Yeah, I've been told also a hack for, like, removing thin coats of paint without totally screwing with the one underneath. Airbrushes, they have a cleaner to clean out the airbrush, and I guess if you buy that and put it on a Q-tip, you can use that to, like, clean up mistakes really well. I haven't done this yet, but I've seen videos of people doing it. And
buy an airbrush cleaner or buy an airbrush?
Buy an airbrush cleaner.
Huh, okay.
And some Q-tips. So if it comes to that, yeah, might help you.
Yeah, I'll try to see how it goes, and then I might panic and do that for the next one. But yeah, other than that, it's been like busy week. I got a new monitor. It's like a 34-inch ultra wide. It's like too wide. I was playing Overwatch and it made me nauseous. I was like, oh, that's fun. Although some people say that Overwatch makes them nauseous anyway. And then I just watched Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom. Yeah, which I've only seen once before. So. Was neat watching that again.
Nice. Send me pictures of your minis as you paint them, by the way. I like seeing the works in progress and everything.
Yeah, we'll do. Soon I'll do the ATST, but today's not.
Yeah, that'd be fun. So, comic books. What do you guys want to start with? And by that, I mean, let's start with Carmen, because that ended, and I feel like we could discuss this a little longer than the others.
Yeah, I liked it. Did anybody else like it?
I thought it was horrible.
Oh.
No, I kind of did.
No, I actually really dug it. I thought the...
You really got me there, John. But
Chad is agreeing. I like this.
I should let Chad go. I thought it had, like, a bunch of false endings, and there was a moment that I think it could have ended and it would have been perfect, but I liked it overall. Alex, you should reveal how you feel, and then... Like thumbs up, thumbs down, and then Chad can make his case.
I would say I've been the least excited about this series on the whole, and this last issue didn't blow my socks off, but I was like, oh, okay, that's Carmen's fair. Done.
All right, Chad, stand on your soapbox.
This did basically exactly what I didn't want it to do, which was bring her back to life in some weird roundabout horseshit way.
Oh, buddy, I knew that was coming the whole time.
I kind of figured, but I really didn't want it to happen. I really didn't want to be like, it'll end happily. I'm the bad person here, but I really didn't want that to happen. I also
it doesn't
didn't
make
really
you a bad
for...
person. I feel like it was kind of like easy to see from a mile away that they were probably going to bring her back.
And that's why it felt like horseshit, because it's just not every ending deserves to be happy, and she can like come to conclusions, but still have to face the consequences of her actions. Like it's. I don't know, I didn't like the bureaucracy stuff in this. I liked it in the previous things, but when they're, like, thumbing through, you know, the computer and looking at files, and it's like, did you know this specific thing that only ever happened once with her happened? And it's like, oh, fuck. I know what's gonna happen now. Like, they telegraphed the ending there, and I was, like, upset because it's lore I didn't need, it's lore I didn't care about, and I feel like the conversation was really, really forced as a setup, because you can't just ask Puller alive, you have to at least pretend like you thought about doing that from the beginning. And, yeah, like, there's just stuff in here that it's a lot of stuff in a small amount of page space, which I think hurts it a bit, but then the stuff that is in here, I wasn't really a fan of some of it. I will say the artwork's fantastic, and those two bureaucrats having a conversation, like, their facial expressions are fucking perfect, like, a lot of it. They're very funny.
Yeah.
But it's also just feels like not what this story was about, and it's like this weird diversion in the last issue so we can force a happy ending.
I think it was exactly what this story was about. I'm with you in that I hoped that it wouldn't just end with her just coming back to life and everything being fine, which is more or less where it leaves things, even if it's a little bit messy. I think that the part of the problem, there's a definitely a more elegant way to do the bureaucracy thing that kicks off the issue, where those two characters are like looking into Carmen's past. But a lot of that to me just reads like it was, I don't want to say poorly translated, but it feels a lot like a lot of literal translations that aren't adjusted to reflect the way people talk. And I say that because it reads like anime subs. I'm serious. Like,
No, you're not wrong.
It's funny because it's accurate.
Yeah. So, and I feel like it falls into that trap where, like, if I feel like you could adjust it in a way that is, because I feel like this isn't textually, I feel like this isn't how that scene was written. Like, I feel like obviously we got the gist of it. I'm not saying like information was changed or anything, but I feel like that conversation is supposed to flow much better. And I'm a little surprised given how well a lot of this book ended up being working like as a work in translation. That being said, I think this is like a double sized issue, or at least double the size of the normal issues. It's almost 40 pages. And I feel like it goes on a little bit, like a lot of those moments at the end where she's going back through the people that she saw while she was a spirit. I think like those are like really touching moments and really impactful. Like I cried when she pulls the ring out of the engagement ring out of the sewer. And
was so fucking sacred, dude, and dumb.
It's really corny, but it landed so well. So like that, and the bit with the cat and her naming the cat Carmen, like I thought those were great moments, but I thought this book ended on page 21 in the digital version, which is the page of all the spirits flying away and the guy who got hit by the car holding the ring up in his hand. And I really wanted this to end in a way that, and I, like, whatever, like I'm not the writer. I don't want to like armchair write it, but I thought that like ending it with some degree, like, because I think at that point, there's a point where, like, you learn that Kata is, like, going to get another chance at having a life. It's just a matter of, is that life going to be in her body, or is she going to be reincarnated in a positive way? And I feel like, you know, that is a happy enough ending without going into all of the other stuff, where I think the other stuff is fine, but I just think it would have been a more effective ending if it had just cut itself off a little sooner.
I don't disagree.
I super agree with that.
But overall, it's hard to complain because I think the stuff that comes after is... I don't think the stuff that any of the stuff that comes after is bad. I'm not necessarily, like, on the same page with Chad there. And I think that, like, you know, if it had ended before without that stuff, I would have been left wanting more, so... Seeing some of the conclusions to that is nice in a sense, but it's easy to treat it as like, oh, you know, the actual story ends here, and this is sort of like an epilogue. And as an epilogue, those last like 15 or so pages are fairly satisfying, I think. If you like, I don't know, it's tough because I don't think it's the best ending, but I still think it sticks the landing.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I liked it. I also felt like some of the dialogue was a little stilted and that it maybe didn't need to be as long as it was. I actually felt like as much as I loved the art in this section, I felt like the conversation between like the two other like afterlife people felt like it went on a little longer than necessary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like overall, I've liked this the series, and yeah, I'm glad that we read it.
Also, I have to say, the scene where her roommate finds her in the bathroom, and the, like, total no words on any of the pages, there's, like, I think it's a sequence of 4 or 5 pages
mm-hmm.
of her finding her and then, like, calling an ambulance and them doing CPR, I think is a really fucking effective sequence. And that scene where she finds her is, like, genuinely horrifying.
Yeah.
Because the conceit is like, oh, there's a power outage, and so the movie that the roommate is watching ends or cuts off, and so she's like, I'm just gonna go to the bathroom, but she's only using her phone light, or the flashlight on her phone. So she goes in there and sits down on the toilet and doesn't even realize it immediately. And you just get the, like, phone light casting the shadow as she just, like, catches it. Like, there's, like, a moment where she catches it out of the corner of her eye, and then, like, you see her head turn, and then she just sort of, like, falls off the toilet in horror. It's just a really fucking effective scene.
I gotta say, that's, like, one of my biggest fears, is going to the bathroom in the dark and using only my phone light and then finding something horrifying.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that's fair. Bathrooms are scary. I don't know what it is about them, but
it's the vulnerability.
I also find them scary.
It's like, you know, you're like, you're basically, whenever you go into a bathroom, like, there's only a few things that you generally do in a bathroom most of the time, and a lot of times it involves taking off your clothes and making yourself, like, vulnerable.
Yeah, that could be it.
So, what do we want to hit next?
Oh, you have
Emily, go ahead.
I liked Mamo. There, anyone else read Mamo?
You know what?
I read it.
I was pleasantly surprised by this, because I saw the Boomhouse art style, rolled my eyes, and then was like, wait, hold up. I got, like, halfway through it, I'm like, okay, wait, this is actually kind of good, I'm into it.
I really liked this a lot. It was really cute.
Yep, that checks out.
I mean, yeah, like, in least surprising news ever, I fucking love this, but I thought it was really cute, and I'm super excited to see where this goes.
It felt like reading a webcomic, and that's partly because of the Boom art style.
Yeah.
But just, like the panel layouts are really simple most of the time. The pacing of it, the tone, the coloring, like, it's just very much like, oh, I could probably read, like, this looks like something I would read for free online, but in a good way. Like, I did enjoy it. I thought the characters are pretty captivating. The sense of kind of danger at the end when they go into the attic was pretty good. Like, there's a lot of good stuff here. I honestly kind of like the art style too. Like there's something almost nostalgic about it.
I should say, shading, I don't
the scratchy on the cat or whatever, like that was nice.
Yeah, I don't hate the Boom art style. It's just that, like, it's so associated with a specific type of comic that I tend not to like very much, which is, like, I mean, there's plenty of comics with this art style that I enjoy.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, like, I look at it and go, okay, I know what this is going to be. And this is, like, very much like a young adult fantasy kind of thing. But I think Chad's point, and this is what really sold me on at the end, like, I was enjoying the sort of tsundere witch walking, like, saying she's not going to help, and then, you know, being broken down and eventually helping. But I think Chad's point about the, like, actual sense of danger at the end is what sold me on it too, because a lot of these Boom books have no fucking teeth whatsoever. So, like, they're fun and they're enjoyable, and then you get to the part where the tension is building, and then, like, because it's a book for 10-year-olds, like, it can't actually do anything. It just sort of stalls out, and I think we have kind of run into this in the past with some Boom books, but, like, this one, actually, there was a really good sense of dread and danger, and even though it's not, like, it can't really be scary, but when the witch sees her grandma, it is uncomfortable, and I thought that, like, last sequence was really effective. Also, it was a long issue, and I just didn't notice.
Yeah,
it flew by super quick. And I think part of that is also Chad made the point about the panel layouts being super simple and the pacing being pretty quick. So it reads really easily. There's no pages that have, like, tons of text on them. And it's, like, super easy to follow. The art is, like, aside from a couple of the animals that are super textured and detailed, the art is, like, fairly simple, but not in a bad way. But it's just really easy. It just feels like a breeze. It's really easy and comfortable to go through the whole thing.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was a long issue.
Like, it's like 38 pages, I think.
Yeah, I just literally, like, did not even realize until you just said that right now.
Yeah. But yeah, it's
Chet,
good.
Chet talking about webcomic, I definitely felt that. I felt that the actual dialogue was a bit stiff at times. Like, I liked the conversations they were having, but it almost felt a little bit like, I don't know, it just felt a bit stiff. And like, people, like, they would say these things, but not in the way they said them kind of thing.
There's a few points where the characters are just sort of expositing at each other for, yeah, like, yeah, a couple, yeah, pages
and,
at a time.
And they're, like, yeah, quipping back and forth, and I'm like, I don't know if they'd actually be talking like this, but I do enjoy their relationship, and like,
what, you, yeah, don't have Le Epic Bacon banter with people you met 10 minutes ago, Alex?
Every day I do, but that's my thing, so don't try to steal it, Boom. Yeah, it was good. It was good, and again, like, the fact that it was 38 pages, and it was like, oh, it was easy to read, which, you know, it is a plus in comics. Yeah. It really is, because you get so many that are just not able to tell a story with pace or get bogged down in exposition and stuff, and this one has exposition, but speaking it's of, handled well.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about two comics, so and there's not a ton of books this week.
I wanted to use that to transition into the nice house at the lake.
Yes.
Yes.
So I didn't read that last time. I got caught up this week.
The first issue was a banger.
Okay, I somewhat disagree. I really like a lot of the concepts of the characters in this. There's so many fucking words, and it's supposed to be a comic book, and, like, it's not really what I want unless it's specific writers.
It's got cool art, and it's like, wow, man, I really wish there wasn't this much text and this much, like, stuff going on that I just don't care about at all, so.
Yeah, it just felt really, like, that second page is, like, 30 panels, and there's words across all of them, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna power through this.
Wait, of the first issue?
Yes!
I fucking love that page. That page is phenomenal.
That page can fuck off. There are so many words. They're not even badly written words. James Tynion knows how to write most of the time. Yeah. Like, it's just daunting. Yes.
Yeah, this is Tynion.
I knew that going in, and I was like, oh man, are we gonna get the James Tynion I like, or are we gonna get the James Tynion that writes shitty Kate books?
Inside you there are two James Tynions.
Which is not a compliment for James Tynion.
Oof. I do think that the second issue is a little bit of a drop in terms of quality, but only because it doesn't have as strong of a POV character. It sort of seems like it's trying to do like a thing where it changes the POV character every issue. Because the first one had like that prologue bit with the woman that we spent most of the issue with, and this one has a different character at the beginning. But it's much harder to keep track of everyone when then this issue feels much more siloed and like, okay, these characters are going to do this thing, these characters are going to do this thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so it just feels a lot more cluttered. And I don't know that any of it is necessarily bad. It's just because we're only two issues in, it's so hard to keep track of. And they do that really fucking annoying thing where in the text dump pages, they only refer to people by, like, their codes, like the artist that or the sucks. Activist. That was really fucking annoying in this issue because then like, the characters use their names like normal people when they're talking to each other. And so it's really hard to remember, like, okay, there was this bit that was all, like, referring to them one way, and now they're referring to each other by their names, and I don't know who is who. Mm-hmm. Like, I read the first issue, but, like, if you expect me to, like, retain that level of information over the course of a month, it's not
happening. I definitely didn't remember anybody's fucking little nicknames.
Yeah.
I will say, like, the highs of this comic are definitely worth it. Like, the concept is fucking awesome. And I think the horror elements, the thriller elements, like, all that stuff, like, is really engaging, and it's there. It's just, it's overwritten, and it's sometimes extremely busy, both just layouts of words and then panel layouts and stuff like that. So it's a little frustrating to read. Like, I feel like it gets in the way of its own self as it's telling its story. And it's, I think, both issues did that.
Because, like, James Tynion, like, you could say the Department of Truth, like, it has a lot of text in its issues, but it's delivered in such a different way where, like, that book has so much exposition, but it's stuff that you want to learn about, and it's stuff that you're like, oh my god, like, what is this conspiracy or what's happening on? Like, there's a lot of text, but, like, it's handled so, so well. Where here, it's like, the concept is really cool, but it's like, again, he's like, it's the words tripping over themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have one tiny gripe that I didn't like in issue two. Like, in the first issue, they established that Nora is trans, and then, like, in the beginning of the second issue, there's that moment where, like, somebody gets, like, her name wrong, and I get that that's, like, realistic, especially if it's somebody that, like, it doesn't seem like, I don't know, if they kept up with Nora, like, post-transition until now, but, like, I don't know, it felt kind of unnecessary. Like, you don't have to
remind the reader that
you don't have to
trans because they absolutely forgot,
or you don't have to, like, you don't have to, like, in doing so, you don't have to, like, dead name them.
Yeah,
just a tiny gripe. I did not like this issue as much as the first issue, but I'm still on board with the premise enough that I'm willing to keep going.
That's fair. It feels much more like setup than the first issue. Felt like we got to the action, but this one feels more setup-y.
Yeah.
We don't have a ton of time left, but I do want to talk about Good Asian number 3. Because I have to make Chad defend his... I know Chad's opinion on this book, and I need to hear him defend it, because I could not agree less.
Oh, this issue is another one where it's just super fucking busy. There's so many characters, like, scenes jump so randomly. Like, I lost track of what was going on and who was who, and I realized I didn't actually care what the mystery was, and I've stopped halfway in.
Okay. I didn't have that... I don't know if you and Alex read this, Emily, but... I did not have that problem at all. I feel like about at the halfway point through the last issue when I went back and read the Dramatis Persona at the beginning, I sort of remembered who everyone was. And I actually thought that this issue was way better than the last one. We have like a new POV character who we sort of like get to see the detective through her eyes, and we get to see Chinatown through her eyes. And I thought that was like a really, really smart shift. And I don't know if she'll remain a POV character, like if it'll swap or if, you know, we'll just go back to the main character. But I thought that it was a really good choice because everything felt way more clear. And we got to actually see like an external perspective on the detective work being done, which I actually thought was like fairly easy to follow in this issue, especially relative to the first two, where it's not just like him, like, running through things, which I felt like did get confusing in the last issue. But I liked this issue a lot. I really liked the sort of him going around and like interviewing people about the issue and or about the murder, the disappearance. I shouldn't say murder, we don't know it's a murder, but about the disappearance, and then like all the different ways that like everything that like goes into that, from like the social and racial elements of it, which I think are really compelling. I don't know. I thought this issue was really, really good.
I enjoyed it, but I did find this one a bit confusing too. So it wasn't enough for me to stop reading at like the halfway, but it was something where I was like, who's here? What's going on here? And I'm sure it's a result of not reading this in a trade format where it's like, okay, I have, you know, the whole story in front of me, reading through, here's these characters, here's what's going on. But I'm enjoying the Good Asian.
I mean, to be honest, the mystery itself I don't really care about, partially because it's so simple. It's like, okay, this woman disappeared, and we know, like, some of the potential suspects, and he has to find her. Like, what's so compelling about this issue is the sort of, like, going on, like, as we go on, seeing, like, the broader community around... both the detective and also the woman who disappeared being built out, and that I find to be super compelling. And like the cool POV character they introduce here has like a really well contained arc, I think, where she goes from like, you know, she trusts him, it's like, oh my god, it's an Asian detective, that's never been a thing before, it's the 1930s in California, this is amazing, I look up to this person, and then like sort of having the realization that, oh, just because he looks like me doesn't take away from the fact that he's a cop first and an Asian man second, right? He still does all the, like, drug busts and shit that have caused a lot of tensions. And I love that sort of, like, progressive disillusionment and her at first, like, wanting to get away from her father, and then at the end just sort of, like, going back to him as she's been, like, so defeated and kind of let down by this sort of secondary role model, I think. I thought it was a really good issue.
Yeah, and it's interesting, I mean, like, just how well it paints the impact of, like, one person disappearing. And, I mean, obviously, like, it's in a community where, like, where, yeah, but it's neat just seeing the overall impact.
It's so, yeah. And, I mean, I think Chad's point is definitely valid in terms of, like, there is a lot going on, and we do see a lot of characters. But I think that, like, a lot of them are just meant to sort of, you know, ultimately fade into the background, right? Like, you know, like the seamstress is like someone who we're probably only going to see once because he interviews her. And if he shows up again, it's not going to be in like a major capacity, right?
But I dug this. I'm still into it. Do we want to call it there? Or do we want to bang out another one or two books?
Ordinary Gods, number one. Kyle Higgins wrote this. He did.
Damn, he did. I thought I was really going to get through this episode and not have to admit I didn't read this one.
I was mostly asking Chad because he's editing, but...
We can do one more. We can do this one, and then I'm curious what Alex's quick opinions of Noctera are since he caught up.
Sure did.
But remember, Chad, when you're editing this later, that you did this to yourself.
Well, I mean, it wasn't all of the audio fuck-ups or Jean-Luc having weird gain issues. Yeah, it's totally. Let's talk about one more comic.
Oh, that's true, actually. There's like an extra 5 minutes at the beginning of the show in the recording that I forgot about.
So Ordinary Gods.
Anyways.
Number one, it's a book that like, it's kind of like a thing where there's gods, but they're like reincarnated and they're going into people's bodies and people don't know that they're gods. It's kind of like, I was like, oh, this is kind of like, Kieran Gillen book,
Wicked and the Divine.
Yeah, just like, I mean, very surface levelly and just really in that. But I like the twist at the end. I wasn't thrilled about the book overall. I like Kyle Higgins as a writer. I didn't like the past stuff. I felt was really not interesting, and the stuff with like the gods happening. And I did like what was happening in the present with the kid and sort of his life going on. And the reveal at the end that like he's like this god and he's like his goal is to kill everyone basically and like end the world, but he's just like a kid thing, so it's cool that he's like he's the villain right now, but he doesn't even know it.
He's not the villain.
He's the leader of the gods and the gods are going to destroy the world.
He's the leader of the rebellion. Like he's the god who started the rebellion against the king of the gods, right? He's not like the ultimate villain. I guess like it's sort of a Claudio Kilgannon situation where he has to end the world to save the world.
I mean, if he's gonna end the world, he's the bad guy.
You say that, but if he's gonna end the world to save many other worlds, then is he really the villain?
Yes.
Right? No.
Genocide is not okay.
I don't know.
The
gods can have a little genocide
as a treat.
we did it. No, yeah, but I thought it was neat because he's just like a kid, and then his like he learns that like great, even if it's for a good purpose, his thing is like, yeah, you're actually a guy who's like wants to destroy this world, and it's like, oh shit, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought this issue mostly really sucked. You could not pay me to give a shit about like two-thirds of this issue. I thought there were two really good scenes, and it's the scene where he's in therapy. I thought was pretty good. And
yeah,
then,
page 14, fantastic.
Yeah, and then the bit where he like takes his little sister to like go out and pick up the new young adult book that she wants to read. I thought that was cute. I thought those two sequences were cute because like, oh, this is like, there's actually something tangible here. There's a real person that I can latch on to. And then it just like got rid of all of that. And it's like, no, this bullshit mythology from the first 10 pages is what was important. And I was like, I'm not reading another issue of this. None of the other stuff was remotely compelling to me. It was just very like rote kind of fantasy stuff.
Yeah, I didn't like the fantasy stuff, but it was like, I like the stuff with him. And then I don't know. The twist at the end got me. I was like, ah, yeah, okay, all right. We'll see what you can do, Kyle.
That's fair. All right, well, if you want to talk about Noctera, before you do that, I want to say, Basilisk number 2, major improvement over the first issue. Kind of on board with this one now. But if you guys want to hit Noctera, talk about Alex's thoughts on it, I will leave you to it.
Can I also say that Crush and Lobo was good? We don't have to talk about it. I just wanted to acknowledge that it happened and I liked it.
Yay! Justice League Infinity was good for the first few issues and made me think of Justice League TV show, and then it got bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
Rest in
peace. But anyway, Noctera, I'm all caught up, and I don't know, like, the main character's brother's like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I want it to get infected. It's all over. And then the twist at the end where, like, the quote-unquote good guys are working with, like, the bad guy assassin is, like, nice. Nice, nice, nice.
I'm skimming through this book because I'm trying to remember what happened because I read it on, like, Tuesday.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, yeah, there was, like, the twist where they have captured the evil shadow humans and they're trying to, like, talk to them. That's kind of neat. I like that. The weird dark light good evil through line going through this that, like, is written like it's this big, crazy theme and metaphor when it's the most, like, rote horse shit that you could ever think of.
The dark and the light are at war, Chad!
And, you know, like, there's these just fully black pages with a couple of red text bars about, like, wanking philosophy that it's just so... It thinks it's so much better than it is, I swear to God. Like,
yeah.
And I thought the newest issue was fine as far as, like, this story goes. Like, hey, the plot's moving, some of the character reveals are a little dumb, but I kind of buy them in context.
I still really like the dark villain, how edgy he is, and just, like, his design, where he's just all dark, and then he's got, like, smiling teeth.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing where he's like, I'm gonna come in and kill everyone, I'm like, okay, alright, you do it. Go for it. Also, Scott Snyder's writing class is taking place, I think it's next Wednesday, and I would have signed up, but I have work at that time, it's like 1 p.m. So, if anybody wants to sign up, you can.
I'm good.
Actually, that was the job that Jean-Luc was talking about last episode. He's join Scott Snyder's writing troupe.
Yeah, I'm teaching Scott Snyder's writing class. I'm the professor. First lesson: don't write like Scott Snyder.
That would be so funny if his writing class is him, like, is us watching him take a writing class, and it's just like, oh no.
Yeah, it's called the Scott Snyder writing class because Jean-Luc is teaching Scott Snyder how to write.
It's very kind.
I would pay to watch
Scott
that.
Snyder's probably a better writer than I am.
Hey, he was almost on writer. This podcast, but then we decided we'd like Emily too to come on.
I'm glad I made the cut.
Yeah.
Okay, should we stop there?
We should end the show. Thank you all for listening. You can find us online on Twitter and the usual places on there, at Comics Podcast. I'm at Mountain Dew Liker.
Wait, why are you doing this? Didn't I record an outro
so that you didn't have to do this anymore?
Because I refuse to use it on philosophical grounds.
Well, if Chad's not going to put it in, I guess I have to keep doing it.
Oh, okay.
Emily's at Mpantanata. Chad's at Anonym Band. Alex is at Alex Hanziak. You can find a bunch of other stuff we do on the internet all over the place. Emily has some other podcasts. I'm blanking on the name. Imagine Me and Yuri Kuma. Is that?
Yeah, you did it.
Perfect. And then there's the Fresh Podcast Market. Yeah. She also edits some podcasts. I don't know those off the top of my head.
That's fine. If
you
want to
plug them, you can.
Yeah.
Not today. It's a job, you know?
It's a living.
It's a living. And Chad writes some short stories over at anonymous.wordpress.com. I don't know when that was last updated, but there are some new ones in the pipeline.
Somewhat recently.
Cool.
I got a new one up. It's a little longer than what normally goes up. It's like 4,000 words. People have really responded well to it, though. I've told it's quite spooky. I didn't think it was as spooky as apparently it is. I've had a handful of people be like, you maybe should make it a little less spooky. Or, oh, wow, that was really unnerving. I didn't expect that. I was like, okay.
Shit. So,
if you want a spooky story, head over and enjoy.
Yeah. You could also buy his books on Amazon by searching his name, and check out his metal project at anonymous.bandcamp.com. And Alex, if you want to read some good social media posts, he makes them. He gets paid to make them. It's not even fucking sponsored content. He just posts on the Roller Coaster Tycoon page.
Damn.
And I don't know when the last time he wrote something for cgmagonline.com was, but I know he still does stuff there. So you can go there and look for his name and read some cool articles, like his review of 3-month-old video games. And as for me, you can find me on Indeed.com looking for new jobs.
Yay. That's Indeed.com.
Yeah, my resume's up there. If you're,
hire Jean-Luc.
To hire something. To pay me
next week
$45,000 to $55,000 a year.
Next week, Jean-Luc reads his resume on the show. So
it's really boring. You don't want to hear that.
You don't want to miss it.
Because you took the podcast off, you asshole.
Yeah. Well, look, maybe by the time we record next week, I can add under, you know, some of my, so one of my categories, perhaps like an other category of some kind, that I know all of the Overwatch lore.
Oh, you didn't even mention. We talked. Okay. Through. Okay. Save it for next week. But like,
I'll have the Overwatch novel finished by next week, and I can talk about it then.
Jean-Luc knows more Overwatch lore than anyone in our server, and we've been playing Overwatch since launch. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
Ash and McCree are gonna fuck by the end of this book, and I'm here for it. Frankly,
I hope they do it. Reverse cowgirl, because they're cowboys.
Good night, folks.
Bye, everybody. He's here all week.
Feels like that was a good return to form there.